Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Creams and serums are made of 70% water, 15% preservatives and emulsifiers, leaving only around 15% for the active ingredients that your skin needs. But luckily now, there's Fiber Skincare.
15 years ago, the scientists behind Fiber Skincare started working on nanofibers, which are 500 times smaller than human hair. You know, I saw that in Three Body Problem. Mm. 1 year ago, they patented a way of wrapping the nanofiber around oil or liquid-based ingredients. This means they can deliver 5 times the active ingredients compared to creams or serums, as there is no need for water, preservatives, or emulsifiers.
The first formulation made with this technology is plant-based, anti-wrinkle. It's a set of patches that you use over a series of 7 days. You just put these on whenever you would apply your serums, and your skin is going to feel tighter in 10 seconds. And over the seven-day program, it has been clinically proven to reduce wrinkles by, get this, 19.4%, a very precise percentage. In fact, they have a tighter skin guarantee. If your skin isn't tighter in 7 days, they're going to give you your money back, no questions asked.
You get the tighter skin guarantee with this 7-day routine. Tighter skin or your money back. Get a 15% discount code by using the discount code GAME. That's Fiber Skincare. Clues. A Mother's Day is coming up.
That's true.
You know, that's one of the most important holidays. We got to honor our mothers. They all went through a lot to get us here into this planet. And the gifts for Mother's Day, they can be a little predictable and boring. Sweaters, candles, the dreaded bathrobe. You only need one bathrobe, in my opinion. That's why Aura Frames is the perfect gift to mix things up this year. Named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter, Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
Aura Frames are Wi-Fi connected. They come with unlimited storage. You can share as many photos as you want from your phone to your mom's frame. Not only is she going to be grateful that it's not just another sweater for Mother's Day, she's also going to love that an Aura frame means she gets to see more of you.
Or in my case, she gets to see more of my cat, Skaboolian. My mom loves seeing him rolling around, playing with his toys, doing whatever, and I can upload as many images of him as I want every day, and my mom gets to see them in her Aura frame and then text me about it for all the rest of the day.
Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Everybody listening to Game of Roses can save on that perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code ROSES at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
It's the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses. This is the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses.
Welcome to Game of Roses. This is Pace Case.
This is Bachelor Clues, and it's Gore Girl Summer.
Gore Girl Summer.
Are you ready for it, Pace Case?
Am I ready for it?
Yeah.
I think so. We had the warm-up with Darkseeker guest hosting Twibin last week, and now...
I listened. It was great.
You liked it? I heard you were unhappy with your sauce rating.
Well, I mean, let's be real. If I'm getting any rating other than a minus whatever the highest rating is, I'm anti-sauce. I'm as anti-sauce as it gets. So I should be getting a negative 5 can rating.
0 to 5.
Yeah, I should be getting a negative 5. This is what I'm saying. I'm anti-sauce.
I think because it's Gore Girl Summer that, you know, I'm right.
So
okay, fair enough.
Anyway, the start of our fantastic lineup of interviews starts today. And it's one of my favorite players ever. What I'm considering a huge get for Game of Roses. I'm so honored that she would grace us with her presence.
One of the most important players from one of the most important seasons. I mean, truly an honor and a pleasure to have gotten to talk to her. She spills some real good tea about some of the producers of this season, about some of the producing techniques, as well as like regales us with a bunch of hilarious stories about a variety of things that have happened to her as a result of being in our beloved game and all the things that happen after it as well.
Yes. Oh, before we get to it, we do have one piece of business, and that is Saturday, this Saturday, April 2nd, we are having our first official book signing at Skylight Books in Los Feliz on the east side of Los Angeles. It is a wonderful bookstore. Come there, bring your book. We'll sign it.
To be certain, it's 3 p.m. Saturday, April 2nd at Skylight Books in Los Feliz. That is a suburb of Los Angeles, California. Come one, come all. Bring items to sign. And now, we are proud to present this first interview in Gore Girl Summer. This is... Welcome to the pit. With us today, we have a very special person in the pit, an icon of the pre-Instagram era of Bachelor. She came in ninth place on the historic season 17 of The Bachelor. That's, of course, Sean Lowe, the golden boy. The first sand round on both BIP season 1 and season 3. Founder of the nonprofit She Lift, all around icon of our beloved game. Please welcome to the pit, Sarah Heron.
Thank you. That is the best introduction I've ever had in my whole life. So thank you. That's pretty cool. So cool to be here. Thank you.
Our pleasure. And the intro continues.
We start every Welcome to the Pit episode with a question. Do you know where you stand in the Instagram all-time leaderboard?
Oh, God. We're starting off with comparisons like that. I don't know. Tell me.
You have 249,000 Instagram followers, which puts you at number 94 on the all-time leaderboard, right between Chase McNary from Bachelorette season 12 and the ring winner of Bachelorette season 15, Jed Wyatt. Congratulations.
Wait, of how many contestants? How many are on the leaderboard?
Have there been an all-time? I mean, I don't know what the exact number is, but it's well over 1,000.
Yeah, over 1,000.
Well, yeah, because I guess because of pre-Instagram. Wow. Okay. Thank you. Number 90. I'll take it.
No, thank you. Okay, so we're going to dive into all of the things that you did in your various seasons of play, all the things that you're currently doing, and all kinds of other stuff. But before we get to any of that, did you watch the Oscars last night?
Yes. I worked backwards because I actually turned the TV on right during Will Smith's acceptance speech.
Was that confusing?
It was very confusing. So I was like, what the heck? And had to work backwards so that I could see everything else.
He's just sobbing, talking about how he's been called on by God to protect people. And you're like, what in the hell is going on here?
Yeah. Like, I was like, this is so beautiful. And I was texting my fiance and I was like, oh my gosh, Will Smith won for King Richard. We need to see that. And then everything else just unfolded. And I was like, yikes, this is messy.
Yeah, I liked, someone said, this is why you don't say Macbeth in a theater. But that's the cause of all of this. Truly a remarkable moment in pop culture history.
Yeah, and just a wild night. I mean, I watched most of the rest of the show, kind of like Cliff Notes it, but I love Amy Schumer. And I just wanted to see, you know, the highlights as best I could. So yeah. I saw most of it.
Yeah, I enjoyed the hosts as well. I thought they did an amazing job. And sort of like poking fun at the things the Oscars is criticized for a lot, which I thought was a smart move.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was probably the most relevant moment that the Oscars have had in the past 5 or 6 years. I mean, at the very least now, there are going to be a million memes and people will be talking about this for a couple of weeks. And I think it did bump up, you know, the ratings of the Oscars and the ratings of Our Beloved Game and All Network TV are all declining, but it bumped the ratings up a little bit. So it's only the second worst rated Oscars in history.
Oh God. What was the number one?
Last year's.
Well, I mean, like all television, it's all tanking, it seems like.
All network TV certainly is, which leads us to our first non-Oscars question. We always kind of like to, before we get into your play and how you got involved with the game, what we like to know what you watched growing up and what was your kind of interaction with media? What really like formed your media identity as a kid?
Oh gosh. I watched a lot of TV as a kid. To be totally transparent, like I was super uncomfortable in my body as a kid. I think just having a disability, I always tended to be a little bit more introverted. So I shied away from, you know, like joining team sports and things, anything that would put me like in the center of attention. And so because of that and being an only child, like the TV and movies were my best friend. And so I watched a lot of TV and my parents worked during the day. And I just remember like summer times, my like favorite thing was to go to the movies and watch TV all day. But I loved like Saved by the Bell, Full House. I was that 90s generation of TV. And then I did start watching The Bachelor and American Idol. And this was probably around middle school. And I started getting really in, and Survivor started getting really into all the like reality TV shows.
So was that season one of Bachelor?
Yeah, I've seen it all. I've seen them all.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, season one. And then because I grew up in Colorado when Trista went on and married Ryan, like that was a huge deal in Colorado. So I just remember being like, I don't know how old I was. We could do the math, but I think I was in high school, early high school. And that was just a really cool thing to know that the Bachelorette is from Colorado. Like maybe I'll run into her someday, you know? So I don't know, you name it. I watched it pretty much anything except like a lot of, I don't like a lot of action stuff, which my fiance hates that he's like the action sci-fi buff and I'm the rom-com reality TV.
But you had watched every season of Bachelor and Bachelorette up to when you went in?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you have like hero players, people you looked up to, presumably Trista?
Yeah. I never really started like getting invested in the players aside from Trista just because of the Colorado similarity. But it was around Ben Flanick's season when I really started to like care about the players and the people and the contestants. And that was like, I think right after Ben's season, I ran into Courtney Robertson at a bar in LA. And I just remember like she was the villain. And but I saw her and I was so starstruck and I was like, oh my gosh, you're my favorite, which I'm sure people do that all the time. They'll just be like, you're my favorite, even though they hate you. So there wasn't anyone that I really like idolized or looked up to, but I just started to pay more attention, I would say, around Ben's season. And that was a season I was watching it with my girlfriends. And I remember, so I was 22, I was about 22, and I had just broken up from my first long-term relationship. And I kind of had this like idea in the back of my head, well, maybe if I go on The Bachelor, like I wouldn't have to do online dating because I was so insecure. I was so insecure with my physical appearance and my arm. And this was like the day and age when Tinder was not around, but it was like match.com. Some people were starting to do Hinge And I was always too self-conscious to put myself on those apps because I thought people would just like swipe left or whatever, you know, eliminate. What is the word I'm looking for? Like, not just dispose of you immediately. And so I didn't want to get on the apps. And I thought, well, if I went on The Bachelor, like no one would know until I'm there. Like they can't just swipe left on me when I show up out of the limo or, you know, this is how my brain was working. It's kind of sad and pathetic.
Like have to have a conversation first, you mean?
Yeah. It's like they have to kind of get to know me a little bit first. And then my brain was so weird. I was even thinking past The Bachelor to like, well, if it doesn't work on The Bachelor, when I come home, people can just Google photos of me to know what I look like so that I don't have to show them on my dating app. Like my brain was just reeling with reasons of why I didn't have to put photos of myself on a dating app.
Yeah. But I mean, that's in my mind, pretty fascinating because it's not, there's a component of it too, that is like, we talk about this on our show a lot, the nature of the parasocial relationship that you form with the audience as you're on the show and then through social media later, which came a little after your season actually, but to have like the wherewithal to know that kind of going in, that one of the potential benefits of coming out of this is you will be able to develop parasocial relationships with any potential new suitors and they can just Google you. They can just find your pictures online. And it's like, now, did that happen when you came off the show where they're like dudes coming up to you in bars and stuff and be like, I saw you on Bachelor?
Not at all.
Really?
Not at all. And, what? And still like not to this day. I mean, I'll get approached by men, but typically it's like, my wife loves you. You know, that sort of thing. The Bachelor never did me any favors in the dating game at all. And I'm okay with that. it's honestly fine. Also, if you meet, like, I was living in LA, I was 23, 24. If I met a guy at the bar who was like, hey, I really liked on The Bachelor, I don't know, I'd probably be a little, I don't know, I would question it a little bit. Question the motives. Yeah.
A guy who watches The Bachelor, you're like, I don't know.
Which is fine. But I just mean like the motives of trying to date me because which I'm sure many of the women have to deal with today, men and women have to deal with today.
Yeah, for sure.
But I don't.
The strategy of going on The Bachelor to get out of online dating was not a good strategy.
I know. It's not.
Wait, what made you move to LA?
So I moved when I was in college. I went to the school called Otis College of Art and Design. It's a design school. You've probably seen it when you're driving to LAX or flying out of LAX. It's this huge school right outside of the airport. So I moved for graphic design and ended up graduating with my Bachelor of Fine Arts and went into advertising.
And what was your relationship with social media before you went into the game? Like right around the era, by the way, season 17, we should note, was right before season 18. And right after season 18 was Bachelor in Paradise, which kind of merged with Instagram really. So when you were in the game, when you were shooting season 17, obviously Instagram was out, but Bachelor influencers weren't really a thing yet. So as you're going into the game, did you have an Instagram? Did you have a MySpace? Like what did you have going on at the time? And were you prepared for how all that would be affected when you came out of the show?
So I had all the social media profiles. I worked in advertising. So everything I did was like digital first, right? So I was an early adopter of Twitter and Instagram, and I was always keyed in. But I didn't have a following, of course. And I don't think like partnerships really came about, maybe one or two right after Sean's season, but I think they started trickling in after Paradise. Because when I left for the show, like we never thought, oh, well, you'll come off the show and you're going to get a huge Instagram following and you're not going to have to go back to work. It's like, I came off the show and I went back to work and my Instagram probably just like dropped for, you know, that first year. I remember watching the numbers like climb, just staggering. And back then it was like, oh my gosh, I got 10,000 followers. And now we see these people get like a million followers, but I didn't really do anything with it for that first year or two post Sean's season. Even though I was getting tons and tons of messages and followers from young women, which we can talk about, that led to developing SheLift. But in terms of like, yeah, social media deals and partnerships, that really didn't start until Paradise.
I want to go back to the Courtney Robertson the bar. Did you talk to her at the bar that you saw her at?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. And I got a photo with her. This might have been like either right before or while I was going through casting, but I did get a photo with her. It's the worst photo in the history of photos, but I was just like, oh my gosh, I love you. Even though in the back of my mind, I was like, she's a villain. Ha ha ha. But other than that, it was not an eventful story.
But she's one of the greatest players who ever lived. I mean, bar none.
Yeah. She's one of our favorites. And so are you, to be fair, although you said a lot of people bullshit that, but it's true. This is very exciting for us.
Absolutely. So how did you get in the game? Did you apply? Were you nominated? Did a producer reach out to you?
So it was while we were watching Ben Flanick's season, and I expressed to my friend, like, oh, maybe if I went on The Bachelor, I wouldn't have to, I wouldn't have such a hard time dating. And I don't know, we probably had a pretty heartfelt conversation about it. And then a couple days later, I'm at work, a girlfriend at work, different friend comes up and she's like, you're never going to believe this. I got called in for casting on The Bachelor. And I kind of was just like, Mandy, this is like my dream. I want to do that. So you're so lucky. This is so amazing. You know, I just thought it was the coolest thing. And she was like, well, I don't know. I don't think it's really right for me. And I'm dating that guy. Like, should I just go for casting and see what happens anyway? And I was like, yes, go, go, go. You have to go. This is so amazing. It's once in a lifetime. And so I was just like super stoked vicariously through her. And then she came back from casting that day back to the office and was like, so I hope you don't mind, don't freak out, but I told production to call you, or I told casting to call you. And I was like, oh my God, it's happening.
Oh shit.
And sure enough, they reached out maybe within 24 hours. I mean, it was super, super quick. And they said, can you come in tomorrow into the LA casting? And because I had to ask for work off, I went to my bosses and I was like, this is a dream. Can I please go? I'm sure it won't turn into anything. And they were like, okay, like we'll throw her this bone. Like, let's entertain her. And they let me go. And I went in for casting. We'll never forget it. And they offered me a spot on the show right then and there. I never went for any other interviews or like photos or video submissions or anything like that.
Wow.
Damn. And you were like, sorry, Mandy.
Yeah.
Your spot's taken.
Yeah. I mean, she was okay with it. We're still friends.
Who was your producer, if I may ask, once you got into the show?
My producer was Alon Gale.
Heard of him. Very interesting. Wow. All right.
Yeah. So I was pretty, I had a lot of producers, but at the time, like, you're so naive to things. You're like, okay, Alon, yeah.
Right. You got thrown right into the deep end with the biggest shark in the pool.
Yeah. And then you kind of like, while you're going through it, you learn like who's the higher up and okay, I get what's going on here. And then you come out of it and you really realize like who your producers were. And I was really close. I mean, I was like under almost immediate, I don't want to say supervision, but like, I don't know the right word. My most immediate producers were Alon.
You're captive.
Yeah. my elders, I don't know. My captors were Alon and Pete Scalatar and Bennett. And so now if you know these producers, like they will, Pete and Alon aren't there anymore, but I think Bennett still is, but they're like top of the top. So I have my own theories as to why I was, you know, close with them, which I'm sure a lot of other like key players in the show also get paired up with those producers because they probably have a little bit more advantage or like ability to see certain storylines.
Yeah. Your story sounds a lot like Charlene's when we talked to her about like just being like a huge get for them. Mm-hmm. And they're just excited about it.
Yeah.
Well, we certainly talk about the idea of protected players, that mm-hmm. if producers have storylines that they've developed that they need to protect a player from like any kind of potential incursion from any of the other players who might derail that, then they can just kind of put you on the straight and narrow, or if they have certain things that they've already mm-hmm. like pre-decided for you. Did you feel like that was happening when you were in the season?
Yes. Yeah. But I think more so when I came off. But to go back to my career in advertising, mm-hmm. going into this, I had knowledge. I'm like, I know they're producing a show here at the end of the day. This is my dream and I believe in the process and the fairy tale, but I know what's happening here. It is mm-hmm. a TV show. There's narratives, there's an agenda. So I always had the wherewithal to know I'm going to be produced. Like, this is not all, there aren't millions of dollars going into every episode to just watch chaos unfold. Like, it's scripted to a degree. Mm-hmm. So, I always knew that I felt a little protected. Yes. But then I just kept getting all this special attention from Sean. So I believed it, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. And
yeah.
And so I was like, well, from day one, I mean, I got the first date card, mm-hmm. the first kiss, every date after that group date I was on, always had special treatment, always had special attention. And I always thought, like, producers have got to be doing this. But then it just seemed so genuine from Sean that mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know, maybe it is real. And then I got completely blindsided.
Did you know, when you were going on like the first date, that's obviously a huge thing to get the first one-on-one in any season. Mm-hmm. That very usually is a player that producers have big plans for. Did you feel like Sean made that decision, or did you know at that time that producers were the ones who selected you for the first date?
Maybe a little bit of both. I definitely thought production was going to want mm-hmm. me to tell my story probably sooner than later. But I guess I wasn't expecting date number one. So when it did happen, I thought it was Sean, and I thought Sean made that decision for that whole first day. And, you know, I definitely like fell for it. And I never listened or I never read his tell-all book.
I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, I've never read it. And I would like to, but I mean, who has the time now? But
maybe an audiobook on 2x speed.
But I heard that he was pretty candid in talking about some of those decisions. I don't know if he ever commented about me personally, but he got pretty transparent in like who producers were trying to make him keep around. And I do think I was one of those.
I remember he had an Instagram story where he was like, the producers pick who goes on the dates. And I was like, oh, I didn't expect that from Sean Lowe. I mean, it's fascinating because you were on the only season that has produced a marriage between the bachelor and his, what we call the ring winner, the person who gets the final rose. And
wild.
It's like a diamond in the 1 out of 26. Night one, they switched it up, which was kind of strange in this period of time where they had these special roses and gave a bunch of first impression roses. What was that experience like?
I don't really recall having any emotions about that. I just
That's fine. I'm like, for us, it's a huge deal.
Yeah, it was just so overwhelming, like the whole experience of it. And honestly, I kind of like blacked out that night, not from alcohol, but like it's kind of a blur. Like, not because I'm losing my memory, but I'm just like, I just remember being like, I don't know what the hell just happened last night. That was crazy. You just kind of sensory overload.
Did you know? And I mean, we can get to this a little later also. Tierra Lacazzi, obviously, we have to discuss. She was the villain of season 17 and had some iconic lines talking about her eyebrow and her sparkle and all this kind of stuff. But she got the actual first impression rose on night one. And then Dark Lord Harrison, or Chris Harrison, as you may know him, came in and told everybody, now Sean can give out 12 other first impression roses. So it kind of took the steam out of the real first impression rose. Did you guys, like, as players, have any indication of what T Tierra was going to become on night one? Were you already picking up some vibes or no?
I did, simply because I had watched so many seasons, and coming right off Ben Flanick's season, I was like, oh yeah, like they're going to make her the villain. But there was also a lot of other ladies that night that I felt like were contenders, but got eliminated that night or got sent home. So you kind of, there's so much going on. You're not actually as like dialed into every single person like you might think you would be, or when you watch TV, like there's so much happening. It's tough to, just to know what is going on with everyone.
So on that first one-on-one date, you land on top of a skyscraper in downtown LA. You're going on a helicopter, and they pick you up at the mansion in the courtyard with everyone watching you fly away with Sean. And you are told that you have to free fall off the side of the building to get some champagne. You make it through this obstacle course, your first obstacle course of the season. And you, at the nighttime portion, you do start to get into your story. Did you feel like Sean and the producers, at the way they handled it, how did you feel about the way that they edited it? How did you feel about that experience?
At the time when it aired, I felt totally fine with the way everything has been edited. Still to this day, I do. I feel like they did me good. I feel everything was pretty accurately represented. The only thing I feel weird about now is being 35 and watching a 24-year-old talk about myself. And so some things I'm just like, oh, I wish I would, like, I would have held myself differently or like spoken about myself differently. But as far as what made the edit and what was aired was pretty spot on. The only thing I didn't really like was, and throughout the whole season, it felt like I kept getting put into scenarios that were to make me vulnerable. I had my breaking point at the roller derby date because I was just like, what the hell? Like, why don't I get to go on the Rodeo Drive shopping date? Like, why are they putting me in scenarios where I'm literally like physically being pushed to do things that I'm really uncomfortable in? And that also goes back to me talking about when I was a kid, I hated doing any physical contact activities that put me in the center of attention. So
I'm sure you had talked about that in the interview process, that kind of thing would be uncomfortable. I would be so uncomfortable if I was on a roller derby date. I'd be like, no. I protest.
I don't think I ever shared that with them. I must have, actually.
I mean, was Emily Maynard season 11 or 15? She was season 11, right? Brad Womack's first season. She was his second, 15. So they made her go to a NASCAR track and drive race cars around a racetrack, knowing that her prior husband had died and was a race car driver. Like, they will use those things for, in quotes, good TV. But speaking of that roller derby date, so in that date, and this is a date that we call the forced violence group date, where they are going to force all the players to like either box, or in this case, it was roller derby. And for all the players, I think it was like, it seemed like no one really wanted to do that. And eventually, Amanda Meyer takes a spill on the track, cracks her chin, has to be taken to the hospital. And then later that night, you've also overcome great hardship, as you mentioned. This is one of the exact things you didn't want to do. Later that night at the after party, it's like, it seems like you, in my mind, you or Amanda would get the group date rose simply because of what you were put through in the course of this day. Instead, Tierra Lucchese emerges from the shadows, plays an IFI, or a Make Me Stay, sorry, to Sean Lowe, and it works. She gets the group date on that rose. What was it like for you and the other players that night when she was given that rose? Did any of you potentially think, oh, Sean is not in control of this rose? The producers have made this choice? And were there conversations about that at all?
Yeah, there were conversations, but I don't think we thought it was a producer move. Like, we genuinely were like, what the hell? Like, this girl has him like mesmerized. You know, like we really thought Tiara has control over Sean. We don't know what it is. I don't think we've ever thought it was production. And I don't know if maybe because we were just in it for long enough that we were starting to just like maybe lose sensible thought processing. But like,
we were, I'm sure that happens.
we were like, wow, Tiara's really got him hooked.
You had also just come off of Courtney Robertson's season. So you're like, I've seen this strategy work before. She won the ring.
Totally. It was tough with Tiara because Tiara, I do feel like, is kind of a misunderstood person. Mm-hmm. And because of that, and I'm someone that's like, I see misunderstood people. I've always been a misunderstood person. And so I gravitate towards them or they gravitate towards me. And so I actually like, I wouldn't say became friends with Tiara early on, but I guess she felt safe with me and I didn't see her as like a threat. Mm-hmm. And so it's just really tough because she is someone that I was like, she wasn't as bad as the edit she got. And it was bad. I mean, to the point where it forced her off social media. She, you know, it really affected her life. And I'm sure she wasn't perfect by any means, but it really affected her. And I always feel bad about that.
Oh, any villain now, the edits that they get. I mean, it was bad for Tiara. It was bad for every villain even back then because you'd be plastered across the cover of Us Weekly or People or whatever. And like, it's the villain. She's so bad. She's so nasty. But now it's a million times worse because of social media and the kind of aggression, I think, that the audience has toward people who are painted by the producers as negative in any way, really. You're getting death threats and stuff like on a daily basis.
I say all the time, there's no way I would go on The Bachelor or any show today. The way the world is today and social media is today, I just don't think I would do it. It's just, it's a scary place. It's a scary place out there. So.
And you found a wonderful partner, which is
Yeah, and I'm engaged, so I don't need to. Yeah, oops.
Week 4, you all travel to Montana. You do something that we call the I Love Cleveland, where you all talk about this lodge hotel as it's like the greatest thing ever. Are there lines that they need to get for that? Do people just naturally jump on the beds and scream off the balconies?
Oh no, 100%. They're like, I mean, you've seen it even with Paradise. Every single season opener, all the girls are outside being like, welcome to Paradise. I mean, you do that stuff over and over. And I remember with Montana, what was so interesting, I think Chris Harrison came in and announced it like in the morning, like pack your bags, you guys are going to Montana. And when they stopped filming, I went up to him and I was like, you know that this is like my dream. I put this in the interview packet that I want to go to Montana. I've always wanted to go to Montana. And he was like, yes, I know, Sarah. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's happening for me. And so there's just little things throughout it that you're like, this is working for me. Like they're pulling strings for me. So then when you get to Montana, you're like additionally enthused because you're like, it's happening. It's going to be here. Like I'm going to, I don't know. It's just so the whole thing is so twisted.
You're like, I'm going to go on a dream date in Montana. And then you go on the first obstacle course in the history of our beloved game.
Really?
This farmland obstacle course, which involved canoes, hay bales,
and
sawing logs, and then drinking hot goat milk, which Desiree Hartsock chugged.
Yeah.
Is that what your vision of Montana was?
No. And I never even left the hotel really besides that date. That date, if the roller derby physically injured me and brought me to tears, the obstacle relay race date, like made me angry. Cause then I was just like, seriously, here we are. You want me to bale hay and saw logs. It was, and like milk a goat with one hand. Like it was just at that point, I just remember being so, that's where I was starting to lose my temper. And I went home like the next episode. So it's probably why.
You think the producers at that point, did you tell them like, this sucks, what are you doing? And they then in turn were like, you're out of here.
So actually, I mean, yeah, I was getting very vocal about it, especially after the roller derby date, because I was so upset. Bennett actually pulled me aside. And I remember we had this conversation and he started crying. We were like standing in this stairwell and he started crying and said he just wanted to apologize to me because he didn't realize that it was going to be that like uncomfortable for me, mm-hmm. Emotionally. And he said, you know, because he was like, I just wouldn't want to put my daughter in a position like that. And I guess I didn't really realize the magnitude of what we were putting you through until wow. I saw it. And he was crying and felt really bad. And so then getting a response like that from production and then getting immediately put into another date, I was like, what the fuck? Like, we just talked about this. And yeah, that's when I started kind of losing my temper with them.
That's fascinating.
This is making me mad.
Yeah, we don't know any of the producers, but I've been coaching a few players who were in this past season 26. Mm-hmm. And so I now know some of the tactics that producers use to gain trust from players that I think are used kind of in a blanket way for all players. That, I don't know. Maybe he really was sad. Maybe that was heartfelt. But then, like you're saying, to then turn around and be like, look, I'm so sorry we had to do that to you. But now, saw logs and chug goat milk. Everything's great, right? It's the dark side of it.
It makes you wonder. Like, it really, and what's the whole, with the whole franchise, what's so crazy is they treat you like that. And you're like at your wit's end and you're like, this is disrespectful. And then they're like, do you want to come to paradise? And you're like, okay, I'll come. Yeah. It's like, you love them again immediately.
They're like, but now we're traveling again.
In the next week, you went on the Polar Bear Plunge group date.
Yeah.
And that was obviously very famous for Tierra Lacazzi getting what she said was hypothermia and making it kind of all about her. She played another IFI there.
Yeah.
Let me just ask you this. How cold was that? Do you believe that she actually could have had hypothermia? Was that possible?
Well, let's see. Knowing what I know now, because, you know, I'm much more like recreational and I live in the mountains. The water, yes, was freezing. That was October in the Canadian Rockies. So yeah, the water was probably not freezing. This was probably like 40 degrees, I'm guessing. It was freezing. But I mean, none of us got hypothermia. I think if anything, maybe it was like a nervous reaction or anxiety. And then it just escalated and maybe she didn't know how to like get herself out of what she started. I don't think it was hypothermia.
Yeah, like a panic attack.
Yeah. It's just one of the greatest moments in the history of the game, in my opinion. I just wanted to see what it was like from the perspective of somebody who was actually there.
I don't know. At that point, again, I was like just losing my like patience. And I just remember being like, this is some good drama. Like, yeah. I was there for it when it was happening. So I was like, she's going to be fine. This is all just theater, right?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Clues. A Mother's Day is coming up.
That's true.
You know, that's one of the most important holidays. We got to honor our mothers. They all went through a lot to get us here into this planet. And the gifts for Mother's Day, they can be a little predictable and boring. Sweaters, candles, the dreaded bathrobe. You only need one bathrobe, in my opinion. That's why Aura Frames is the perfect gift to mix things up this year. Named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter, Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
Aura Frames are Wi-Fi connected. They come with unlimited storage. You can share as many photos as you want from your phone to your mom's frame. Not only is she going to be grateful that it's not just another sweater for Mother's Day, she's also going to love that an Aura frame means she gets to see more of you.
Or in my case, she gets to see more of my cat, Skaboolian. My mom loves seeing him rolling around, playing with his toys, doing whatever, and I can upload as many images of him as I want every day, and my mom gets to see them in her Aura frame and then text me about it for all the rest of the day.
Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Everybody listening to Game of Roses can save on that perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code ROSES at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
Clues, have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp or ever wondered
Hell yes.
why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised?
Hell yes. Well, unfiltered mineral water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And about 75% of the United States uses hard water filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine.
I thought it was 85%. And that's where Canopy's new filtered showerhead comes in. Canopy, known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, has revolutionized the filtered showerhead. Dermatologists recommended unique three-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water, leaving you with healthy hair and glowing skin.
Best of all, the Canopy filtered showerhead is hassle-free. Installation's a breeze, and it's unique. Quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement unlike any others on the market.
Go to getcanopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered showerhead purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription.
Even better, anybody listening to Gore right now can use code ROSES at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
Now.
And then after that, they give you a benevolent elimination. They send Sean Lowe in to say, this is not working out for you, and you don't have to go through the next rose ceremony. You go out in ninth place. So In that moment, they're putting you in the back of the car to drive around the hotel for a while, and then eventually you come back. Did you know in that moment that VIP was even going to be a possibility? Were producers talking about it at all? Did they even know that they were going to do it?
No, not at all.
Wow.
No. If anything, like it was too early to be like, well, maybe I'll be the bachelorette, but like their paradise was not a thing.
Did they ever bring up bachelorette with you?
No. I think a lot of people talk about, oh yeah, they were talking bachelorette with me. And I'm like, okay. they talk to everyone about that, but they didn't with me.
Yeah.
They didn't. I think people, you give a mouse a cookie, or you give whatever the saying is, you give it a crumb, it takes a cookie. A little bit of information gives people the wrong an idea that they're like going to be the bachelorette all of a sudden.
Did they sit you down? We've talked to other players, Pilot Pete being one of them, who talked about at the beginning of a season, the producers will come out and tell you, like, some of you are going to wind up getting famous from this. One of you might even be the bachelor. Did they do that to you guys on your season? You did not have the pre-season speech.
No.
Interesting. Okay.
The only speech we got night one, or I guess it was morning two, you know, when we all came back into the mansion, was there's this guy out there named Reality Steve, and he makes a living spoiling the show. Do not speak to Steve. If he reaches out to you, there are legal ramifications if you speak to Steve. Like, that was the only watch out we really got. Oh,
just a threat. So night one, they're like, we're now going to threaten you and now find love.
There's this guy, Steve. Yeah. Don't talk to him.
And I was terrified of, I mean, we all were terrified of Steve back then.
God, of course. So you come off the show, you feel like this is it. My playing days are done. And then eventually you get this call. What was that call like for Bachelor in Paradise? Because they essentially had to pitch you the show, I assume, on that call and be like, this is kind of what it's going to be like. Do you want to come? Do you not? And what made you decide to do that?
Yeah, they called me and said, we have this new concept. I think they originally kind of phrased it as like, we're going to take back contestants that didn't find love the first time and give them a second shot at love. But you're all going to like live together on an island at the time. It was, you know, it wasn't Mexico, hadn't been determined yet. And so it's kind of like Temptation Island, but like romantic, and everyone's going to find love in it. And I was like, I don't know. I started talking to a few of my other friends who had also been reached out to, and we all kind of decided, why not? Like, let's give it a shot. What could happen? I asked my employers for time off work again and figured, got nothing to lose. Let's give it a shot.
Who were your friends going into that season?
So I was good friends with Brooks Forrester. Who else? This feels like so long ago. Brooks, Michelle Money. Mm-hmm.
Ashley Frazier ended up being
Ashley Frazier, yeah, because she was from my season. Jackie was from my season. Yeah, Claire, Zach, Coulter, and Robert. I knew a little bit just from the LA scene. Like basically whoever lived in LA at the time.
And do you remember what happened to your Instagram as a result of your first season on BIP?
In terms of numbers?
Yeah. Like when you came off, when the show started airing, did it like just explode?
Yeah. So, well, again, relative numbers, but when, so after Sean's season, I capped out around like 72,000. Mm-hmm. And then when Paradise started airing, it was like creeping up 100, 120, 200. I think it was around 200 or so.
Dang. So at that point, did you start doing SpawnCon? Was that like, you're like, well, I already know ads professionally, so I'll be better than anyone at this.
Not really. Not really. No, I got a few offers for like FabFitFun. But again, I had my career. I had my dream job in advertising. I really didn't want to leave it. I was making like award-winning commercials and stuff. That was my priority. But all that changed after Paradise season 3.
So yeah, let's talk about Paradise season 3. So season 2 goes by and then season 3 happens, which for me is like probably the most important of all the seasons, because this is where they have solidified the formula now. And everybody on that season is a massive heavy hitter. Amanda Stanton, Josh Murray, Carly Waddell, Evan Bass come out of that season. Lace Morse, Grant Kemp, Ashley Iaconetti, Wills Adams, Jared Hybon, Kayla Quinn, the Ferguson twins, Chad Johnson, and of course, the greatest player of all time, Nick Vial, was on that season. Please tell me, what was it like to be a player alongside the great one, Nick Vial?
Oh my God.
In Bachelor Paradise season 3.
What was it like for him to be with a fucking star like Sarah Herring?
What was he like? That's my basic question is, what was he like that season? And did he know that he was going to be the Bachelor already when he came in? Did they already tell him that basically?
No, he definitely didn't know, but I would not be surprised if he wasn't campaigning for it before he even showed up.
Sure. And
like, I hadn't known Nick for a while before this, just through the scene and everything, you know, Bachelor related. And he even slid into my DMs. I will put that out there. He slid into my DMs once, and obviously it did not, nothing ever happened, but he did. Let the record show.
I love this record.
Oh my God.
No, so then when we like showed up in Paradise, it's kind of, I don't know. I had met him in person several times and I just knew, I was like, he's going to be campaigning for sure. But he ended up hitting it off. I think he kind of bounced around. I don't really remember, but he ended up hitting it off with
Jen Saviano.
Jen. And they seemed like a really good fit, honestly. Mm. So I was like, oh, okay. Well, I guess actually maybe, you know, it stops here. But Nick is what people maybe don't know about him, I think he's been more transparent about it now in post Bachelor, is like he's pretty, he's an emotional, sensitive guy and he's pretty introverted. So he was not a guy that was like on the beach peacocking or anything. Like he's pretty reserved and you would find him most of the times having like one-on-one conversations with people or hanging out with producers or contemplating things a lot, but he was not like super sociable in the scene.
You mentioned that he slid into your DMs and now like in the contemporary Bachelor in Paradise, everybody's sliding into everybody's DMs, yeah. And the producers are using that to build narratives. And if you were at Stagecoach, and who did you have sex with when you were at stage, all that stuff comes into play now, and you'll be villainized or lauded or whatever the case may be. In that era, in Bachelor in Paradise season 3, was that kind of the case? Were you guys meeting up outside the show? Did you have certain storylines or relationships that the producers used on your season?
I think by season 3, people were doing that to a degree. Season 1, we were not. We were like scared because producers would say, like, if you reach out to anyone, if you communicate with anyone, you're going to be, you'll get sent home. And so people were really good about not chatting too much. And then by season 3, I think it was, but it wasn't like it is now. There was no, people weren't dating at Coachella before they even arrived to Mexico. It was not like that. But I think, you know, people started hitting each other up just to see, like, test the waters, see who they were going to have a connection with, see who was interested in them. And it was not like, Nick never even really hit on me. He just, I think, was probably like trying to get to know everyone, if you know what
I mean. He's like, I'm starting my campaign. You're first on my list.
I need an endorsement.
I firmly believe exactly what you said. I think he was campaigning to be the Bachelor, and obviously successfully, because he then was Bachelor season 21.
I mean, look, love it or not, or like, he's one of my favorite people to watch. Like, I wouldn't say he and I necessarily have the strongest relationship or friendship today. We do not speak at all. I think we follow each other on Instagram, and that's about it. But I thoroughly enjoyed him as the Bachelor. And so I think he's good TV.
So you did seasons 1 and 3. Were you asked for season 2?
No, I was not asked for season 2.
But you go back for season 3. Was that because did you have a different perspective going into 3 than 1?
Yeah, I think season 3, honestly, by then I was just kind of like, okay, I see what this is doing for my Instagram. I see what this is doing for visibility. I was starting to get pretty burnout at my job by this point, and had seen, you know, people come off Paradise 2, really successful. I remember chatting with the guy, the agent who like manages a lot of Bachelor people. And he was like, I won't say the name, but he was like, I worked with so-and-so and got her 6 figures last year on Instagram deals.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no kidding. Okay. Like, that could be fun. So I, at that point I was like, let's just do it. Why not? It was way less about finding love at that point, because I did not really believe in the model anymore at that point.
Were you guys, like all the players, did you all openly talk about Instagram and stuff back then and getting your numbers up and whose agent was getting you brand deals and stuff?
Not really. Because again, back then I feel like people were still a little secretive about it. Like, they didn't even really want to share who their agent was, because you don't want to miss out on Instagram deals that could be coming to you, and but they're going to someone else. People were a lot more like holding it, like information closer. I don't know. And I also just think people wanted to be cautious of getting that portrayal back then. Like, today maybe people don't care as much. I don't know.
No, I think it's more important today, especially in the Bachelor in Paradise game. If you saw what happened on last season with Brendan Marais and Piper James, I mean, they just had one shot of them talking about Instagram. That dude lost 100,000 Instagram followers within like 2 days.
Insane. I know. But no, I never had conversations with anyone about Instagram followers or anything ever.
So you mentioned that you were starting to not like your job. What is the shift in that into what you end up doing now?
Yes. So starting with Sean's season, I started receiving fan mail, like actual fan mail to the office, letters, handwritten letters. They would go to my boss, you know, because they didn't know how to reach me. They would Google me. They'd send stuff to my office. They'd show up at my mailbox, and I started getting all these letters and DMs from people, a lot of them little girls with physical disabilities, or sometimes moms or dads or aunts, uncles, writing to tell me that you know, they watch The Bachelor with their daughter, and this is the first time she's ever seen someone with a limb difference like her on television. Or a lot of times they'd be like, I had to bring my daughter in, you know, she's only four, but I had to show her that someone looked like her on TV. And I started getting all these messages, and I would be like, this is great, but like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with this. I haven't been trained in how to like respond to strangers. And also I was still severely struggling with my own insecurities around my disability. So I kind of just ignored it for a long time. I would say thank you and write back to people on Instagram. And then after Paradise season one, it started to like ramp up even more. And then by like somewhere in between there around season two was airing, it just never really stopped, the, you know, the young women reaching out. And being a creative person and getting burnout on my job and also seeing this opportunity, I started to think like, well, maybe I could be doing something with this. Like, I've been given this platform and I've been given this audience and a group of people who have a need that like, hopefully I could create something that meets that need. And so maybe I should brainstorm on like what that is. And eventually I landed on this idea of starting a nonprofit that helps young girls with disabilities discover confidence and self-esteem through the outdoors, learning to ski and hike and just be in nature. So I started putting all this together before Bachelor in Paradise season three. And I like formed the nonprofit, started planning my programming, and was really planning it as like my exit from the advertising world.
How did you know how to do that?
A lot of research.
I was curious.
A lot of research. Yeah. Well, I mean, from like an idea perspective, like that's what I was getting paid to do, is come up with ideas and be really good at executing ideas. So it's the producer in me, you know, that just figured it out. Also, meanwhile, which we can also talk about, I was like developing my first real manic episode, which I later came to be diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And so that kind of all tied in at the same time. You get a lot of creative energy when you're having a manic episode. So I started the nonprofit, and then they reached out about Paradise again. And I was like, this is it. This is, you know, my shot. I might not find love. I'm not even going in with the idea of finding love, but this will help catapult my nonprofit.
Hey, it's a much better reason than most people.
Totally. I don't think that you go into Paradise without a strategy, without an agenda. If you're just going in there to be like, oh, let's see what's going to happen, you're missing a massive opportunity to grow your platform, to do exactly what you did, essentially, to go in there and be like, I need to get as big as I can, get my numbers up so that when I come out of this, I can do what I'm interested
in. Yeah. Well, and I mean, from... You know, I hate for it to be seen as like even just an agenda, but it was to help raise awareness for the nonprofit. And as soon as I came off the show, I launched my first fundraiser the night Paradise aired, and I got all the cast members involved, and we sold t-shirts online for the nonprofit, and we raised $35,000 that night. So yeah, so for me, it was like, At that point, I still wasn't doing Instagram deals or anything, but I just was, I guess, bringing in revenue for the nonprofit. So
that's incredible.
Yeah, thanks.
I mean, it really is staggeringly amazing that you were able to do that, because so many people go through this show and maybe you come out of it with Instagram followers or whatever, but to have it like that laid out for you, where you're like, I'm going in to do this. Then you come out, you execute exactly that. And it's this thing that's like a good cause, you know? It's not what many players, I won't name names, many players come out and have some not so good causes or like post-game careers that are...
Yeah. Or I think there's a lot of times I'll see like, and I get it, you come off the platform or the show with a platform and people probably encourage you like, hey, you got this platform, you got to come up with something, you got to figure out how to use it while it's hot. And so I do think a lot of people kind of like come up with their whatever thing it is right after they come off the show. But the nonprofit was something I was chipping away at, you know, leading up to Paradise. So I don't feel as like get rich quick.
It's like, no, totally.
I definitely don't think this is a get rich quick story at all. It seems like you went through a lot of obstacles.
Yeah. And I hope I didn't have any romantic prospects there that third time at all. And it was so, you know, I would hate to take up the spot for someone who actually could find love, but it just wasn't in the cards for me that time, I guess.
Yeah.
Or ever.
Ever. Do you keep in touch with any of your friends from the show?
Yeah, I do. I'd like to say I'm pretty close with a lot of people, honestly. Everyone who's been on my seasons or the seasons that I've been on, but most frequently I talk to Claire and I talk to Amanda Stanton frequently. I see her every once in a while. Ashley has been so sweet. I've been going through some fertility struggles. My partner and I have been doing IVF for a year now, and mm-hmm. Ashley has just been so kind and constantly like checking in on me and seeing how things are going. And and so I'd say those are kind of like Carly. I'm really close with Carly, and I talk to Jade every once in a while. So they're kind of all like OG people, and I don't know anyone from like newer seasons. Basically, Ari's season and on, I don't really know anyone else.
Those, I mean, all the players you're mentioning are like the heavy hitters from that era. Like Ashley Iaconetti, mm-hmm. to us, is one of the greatest players that ever lived. Talk about somebody who took her platform and turned it into a massive business. Like, I don't know what she had pre-planned going into her season and her Seasons of Paradise and stuff like that. But look what she's doing now. It's insane what she's able to do. She just has such a good sense for like how to turn her time in game into whatever she wants, really.
Ashley's awesome. Yeah, she's so cool. And Jared is just the sweetest guy ever. So yeah, good people. I mean, I guess I talked to quite a few people from Ari's season, and I knew Ari, but new people I don't know at all.
But you still watch? You watch all the current seasons?
So Clayton's season was the first season I didn't watch.
Why? Wow. What made you make the decision? The first season of any Bachelor or Bachelorette in the history of the game?
Ever.
Oh my God. Please tell me what it's like. What is it like to be able to detach from it?
I thought it would never happen. But I watched the first two episodes and I just was like, I don't know. It was just lacking. It was like, it felt weird. It felt discombobulated because Chris wasn't there. Mm-hmm. It was like you're watching The Bachelor in a parallel universe, and like, I don't know, it was just bizarre. And I've had a hard time like connecting with Clayton as the lead, you know, even as a viewer, I was like struggling to connect with him. And I did watch the finale because of how crazy it was, but I didn't watch the season. And I mean, I tried, and all the stuff with Shanae, it was just getting like, I was like, this is the same script that we've seen every season, except now I am not even invested in the characters.
Yeah. I think we've talked about this a lot on our show, obviously, really deconstructing like what the seasons, various seasons mean historically and all of that. And this was the lowest rated Bachelor season in the history of the show. But again, we don't know if that's because people were tuning out of the season or just network TV is dying generally. I think maybe a little bit of both. But yeah, we agree with you. I think that they have gone down this path for the past couple of seasons, actually, where they're selecting leads who finished somewhere in the, like, you know, 7 to 10 place of their season. Yeah. So we don't get to see them go to hometowns. We don't get to see them do fantasy suites. We have nothing really invested in who these people are as characters. And then what they did to Clayton, I think, was like truly sinister, because they were just making him look bad at every turn. Making him read bad tweets about himself and just like positioning him to kind of be the butt of the joke or the target of Bachelor Nation's ire every time.
Mm. We're almost through the second month of this year, but that doesn't mean that you should forget about those New Year's resolutions, your new goals, especially your skincare goals. Small, easy changes in your routine can have amazing results. And your secret weapon should be Dime Beauty. I've been using this stuff. Look at me. Look at my face, Pace Case.
You're glowing.
How young do I look? Tell me,
Tell me the number.
That's a Pace Case Glow. You look like a little baby.
Thank you. That's the look I'm going for. And I put the stuff on at night, Dime's eye cream. And then they have a dewy day cream that I also use. And this is the result.
I've literally never used a moisturizer before. Mm-hmm. I've always had oily skin, but now it's getting to that time. And I made one of my New Year's resolutions to be to do my skincare routine. And I'm using the dewy day cream in the morning. I keep it on the left. Using the restorative night cream, I keep it on the right. It's bim, bam, boom. I know which one to use. And now my face is moisturized all the time. And it's so nice.
You look like a baby as well.
Thank you. I was waiting for it. A little slow. But this takes the guesswork out of the routine. So this is part of the work system, the two moisturizers. There's also a sold out retinol alternative, the TBT cream. I can't wait to try that one as well. Dime has over 2 million happy customers and their product reviews are literally all 5 stars.
This year, love your skin again. Go to dimebeautyco.com now and unlock your discount. That's dimebeautyco.com. Creams and serums are made of 70% water, 15% preservatives and emulsifiers, leaving only around 15% for the active ingredients that your skin needs. But luckily now, there's Fiber Skincare.
15 years ago, the scientists behind Fiber Skincare started working on nanofibers, which are 500 times smaller than human hair. You know, I saw that in 3 Body Problem. Mm. 1 year ago, they patented a way of wrapping the nanofiber around oil or liquid-based ingredients. This means they can deliver 5 times the active ingredients compared to creams or serums, as there is no need for water, preservatives, or emulsifiers.
The first formulation made with this technology is plant-based, anti-wrinkle. It's a set of patches that you use over a series of 7 days. You just put these on whenever you would apply your serums, and your skin is going to feel tighter in 10 seconds. And over the 7-day program, it has been clinically proven to reduce wrinkles by, get this, 19.4%, a very precise percentage. In fact, they have a tighter skin guarantee. If your skin isn't tighter in 7 days, they're going to give you your money back, no questions asked.
You get the tighter skin guarantee with this 7-day routine. Tighter skin or your money back. Get a 15% discount code by using the discount code GAME. That's Fiber Skincare.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
And I don't, like, that isn't a fun thing for people to watch, I don't think.
Yeah. And I don't know. Some of your guys' memes and posts are so funny, which, by the way, I wanted to comment on that because I think you had a few, like, way back when I came on Sean's season, and I was like, what the fuck is this? What are these graphics? I was like so confused.
Yeah.
Now I live for it. They're so funny.
I can explain it to you. Do you smoke weed? That's basically what was happening. I'd get high as shit and then just lay in my bed and try to make myself laugh with these fucked up satanic images of Chris Harrison and stuff.
That's so funny. Yeah, like I was like, what kind of Photoshop filters are they putting on this? That's hilarious though. But, and I think just with Jesse Palmer, I mean, I'm sure hopefully he's going to grow on us, but it's just tough because he's so like, even though he was The Bachelor so long ago, but we're not like invested in him the way even with Caitlin and Tayshia, it's like,
yeah,
have a connection with them. And so
there was something about Dark Lord Harrison that we always say is like, he was sinister in a way. You could tell that he seemed to enjoy the suffering of the players. You knew him to some degree. I mean, you worked with him on multiple seasons. I'm sure off camera, he's a nice guy and all of that. But did you ever get that sense when like somebody would be really getting fucked over by a producer or some bad situation would happen? Did you ever get the sense that he like kind of enjoyed that?
When you phrase it like that, I'm sorry. No, I didn't.
No, I'm sorry. No, you're crushing his dreams.
I know.
That's so funny.
I've seen it in his eyes. I'll never believe it.
I know. No, but Chris, what was always so surprising about Chris, I felt, but maybe you were seeing right through it, is I always felt he was way more, had a much better sense of humor and was like sarcastic and witty as soon as the cameras cut off. And he just felt more like a friend. And on camera, I always felt like he felt really kind of like, yeah, hosty, mm-hmm. just like kind of fake. But I guess maybe you saw through it, but I don't know. I had a great relationship with Chris and, you know, I'll be interested to see where it goes with the new host, but the Dark Lord
Palmer has stepped in. He really, for me at the end of that season, turned up the volume on his delicious delights when people were suffering. And I think he is going to be a fantastic Dark Lord coming right up. But I'm also curious, like you said, Chris Harrison supposedly is in development on another reality dating show that's going to be on a rival network in the next year or two. I don't know if I'm sure it'll see the light of day. I'm sure they'll do at least a season of it and we'll see if they can compete.
Yeah, interesting. But I mean, what do you think in terms of numbers and players' Instagram numbers, like the drop off? I was shocked to see this year, like Clayton's numbers versus, I mean, go back to like Maddie Pruitt. I don't know her last name. Like she got like 2 million followers after the show. And
so did Pilot Pete that season. He was a lead. He had 2 point whatever million.
Do you think it's just a trend in people like being over and following Bachelor people on Instagram? Or do you think it's related to like that particular cast?
I think it's literally all of these different things are applied toward it. One, Instagram is not as relevant as TikTok. And so I think like in the incoming generation of people who watch the show are all on TikTok. They don't really give a shit about Instagram. Two, it had the lowest ratings of any Bachelor show. And that does affect your Instagram numbers. If less people are watching your show, less people are going to be following you. And yeah, I just think people, the way they positioned Clayton, specifically talking about his low gains, in the first moment we saw him on TV as officially the Bachelor, they had him come out after the final rose and read mean tweets about himself. The producers positioned him as somebody that we were not supposed to like from the first frame. And so I think that carried through. And then it was just a matter of like, well, if nobody's watching the show, the two finalists or even the final three, we all saw that they had sub 200K, I think, at the end of the show. And now, you know, two of them are going to be the Bachelorettes and we'll see what happens there. But
I definitely don't think it's the casting, though, to answer your question. Like, I think some of these people would have had a million plus in if they had played in a different era.
Yeah, interesting. Well, that's a good point about TikTok. I'm fucked in TikTok world, so.
You got to get into it. You got to do it. You got to take the plunge. Get in there.
I know, but
I don't think you are. I think you are such a talent in the parasocial world. Like, I love watching your content more than most players.
Thank you.
And even, like, sharing your IVF journey, like, how do you decide how much of that you're going to put on Instagram? What has been your relationship with Bachelor Nation since you were on the show?
Well, when it comes to my life, I don't know. I've just always been very candid. I'm an open book. So if I'm talking about IVF or I'm talking about mental health, like really there's no boundaries. Like I'll talk about anything. What has been a learning curve in the last couple of years, I think, is jumping the gun on having opinions about things that aren't necessarily your business or your experience. And so whereas like, I don't know. I feel like a couple years ago, there was way less consequence. Like if you had an opinion on Chris Harrison and now it's like, if you have an opinion, it's going to be the wrong opinion to a lot of people and you have to be ready to battle that. And so social media is just a weird wild, wild west where like I'm comfortable talking about my life and bringing people into my life. And then I feel like I have to be a little bit more like pause and think about everything else and like before I weigh in on things, because it's just ruthless out there.
This is, if I may, this is my prediction for where social media is headed. As artificial intelligence and quantum computing really start to step into this realm, I think we're all going to be avatars. I know this sounds crazy, but like as filters are getting better and better on like TikTok or on anything, and you can make your face look like whoever you want it to be, I think there's just going to be like no reason to ever use yourself. And everybody will be doing all their social media through like a fake persona.
Well, that's like that Black Mirror episode. Did you see that one?
No, I didn't see that one.
I think it's Black Mirror. But I've seen this a couple different ways in like sci-fi stuff that Dylan watches. But yeah, where it's like...
you're like, it's on in the background at some point. When
where people like go to sleep and they're like, chamber, and then meanwhile they're like avatar goes out in the world and is the actual representation.
Oh, that Bruce Willis movie,
Surrogates.
Yeah, and then Black Mirror. So go try and go find that Black Mirror episode.
Everybody go watch Surrogates.
Black Mirror is great. It's scary.
Yeah,
but that's not Black Mirror is like a horror movie. So is Surrogates. All those things are always like, here's the worst shit about technology. They never make shows about the best shit about technology. And I think it's going to be great when we can all have avatars and we can all be making whatever the future version of TikTok money is.
Wow.
You should make the optimistic version of Black Mirror, Clues.
I'm trying to. It's my life.
I'm trying to.
I'm living it.
Was I hallucinating? Were you in a Fitbit ad that played at the Super Bowl?
Yes. Yes, I was.
Yes. Okay. I was not hallucinating.
Yeah. That's just another thing that's like very cool for me that feels a little different. And I'm super grateful and honored to even be considered for things like that outside of just an Instagram deal. Like I got cast to be in this Fitbit commercial, and part of it was about rock climbing, which is a passion hobby of mine. And I got to just be me doing my thing and on a different stage. And that was really cool. So, you know, it keeps trickling in weird, unexpected ways. And I'm here for it. I'll keep doing it as long as it shows up. And then probably I imagine honestly, like in the next couple years, it'll probably start to really teeter out for me.
No, but you have 294,000 Instagram followers. Like that's not going to go away.
I don't know. I'm always in the back of my mind. I'm like, what's my exit strategy? Like, should I get into real estate? Like, where I never have to be on Instagram again.
You fake a breakup and then you're the next Bachelorette.
Yeah. Oh, wait, I forgot. So they did hit me up for Winter Games when I was dating Dylan. Oh. And I forgot about that. And I wanted to do it so bad. And I was like actually considering doing one of the fake breakups with Dylan because I was like, this is me. Like I will win Winter Games, like the actual competition element, if I can go on this show. Mm-hmm. But they were like, you're dating Dylan. Like you've been pretty public about it. So it just didn't work out.
You've been pretty public about it. Yeah. Maybe if you could archive like a few of these, I feel like that would help. That's so funny.
But I feel like Winter Games would have been my moment for sure. Oh, Leslie Murphy.
Sorry. What about Leslie Murphy?
I was just going to say, cause she was on that. She and I are very close. I'm sorry. I didn't mention her name earlier. If she's listening to this, Leslie and I are very close.
She was also a victim of Tierra Lacazzi. She had Sean Lowe prepared to go into a hot tub on that group date after party, and Tierra Lacazzi came and stole him away and like prohibited her from doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Poor Leslie.
Yeah.
Leslie also does great social media.
Yeah. She's doing great. Yeah.
Is there anything that would bring you back to the Bachelor franchise? Will you be watching the Double Bachelorette season?
Oh, I will definitely watch. And just because I didn't watch Clayton's season doesn't mean I'm like done with the franchise. I'll definitely get back into it. And certainly when Paradise.
You just hate Clayton and Leslie Murphy.
No, I don't know. I guess I just wasn't into it. My heart wasn't in it. But I will watch it again as a viewer. I don't ever see myself really, I don't see the reason why I would get like invited to anything ever again. Mm-hmm. I used to get invited to like reunions and live tapings frequently, but that doesn't happen anymore. The second you get a spouse from outside the franchise, like, you are pretty much dead to the franchise. I'm convinced.
Whoa. That is kind of true. I'm trying to think of anybody who breaks that mold. And no, I think.
I mean, maybe Nick, Nick's current girlfriend, but
I think they're eyeing her for play. I think the producers, this is conspiracy town, population me. What?
This is just in your fantasies.
I know. Look, I have a lot of conspiracies. Okay. And this is one that I have. I don't know if it's true, but I hope it is, or I wish it would be. I think the producers are angling to break them up so that they can get her as a player in the game and maybe make her a bachelorette.
But they've never even put her on in the document.
No, she was in the document. She was after the final rose of this last season.
Oh, shit. You're right.
She's made her debut.
I don't know. That would be real next level messed up.
I know. I know. You don't think they do next level messed up? Did you watch Bachelor season 24? I mean, come on. The Chase Rice moment with Victoria Fuller.
I know. That was crazy.
Anyway, I don't want to drag you into my conspiracy world any further. I'm sorry.
No, I think that's a great stopping point. Sarah, yeah. If anybody wants to get involved with She Lift, where should they go?
You can learn about She Lift right now on our website, shelift.org. We don't have any programming running right now. So if you go there and you don't see any events, that's thanks to the pandemic. But hopefully we'll get stuff going soon again. And then you can follow me on Instagram at Sarah Heron. Hey, maybe on TikTok. I have a TikTok if you want to follow me there. I think I have 300 followers. I don't even know my handle.
Everyone follow Sarah on TikTok.
Yeah, let's boost 300 followers. Come on. This is Sarah Heron, a superstar player from one of the most important seasons in the history of our beloved game. Everybody follow her on TikTok, please.
Thank you. But I think the coolest content and information I can give out is my newsletter and my blog. I really don't spam people, but I share awesome information, education, opportunities to get outside and do awesome things with other women. So subscribe to my newsletter. It goes out like once a quarter.
Awesome. I'll subscribe.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah, for joining us and having this conversation and telling us all the stuff that you have told us about your experience in the game.
Thank you for taking the time.
Yeah.
This was fascinating. One of my all time, want to get an interview.
Same.
So I'm very happy.
Well, thank you. It was really cool to meet you guys, and I'm flattered, and it was very fun. My cheeks hurt from laughing. So thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much to Sarah Heron for coming on Game of Roses. I mean, I've been looking forward to this interview for so long. She did a little ad for How to Win the Bachelor on her Instagram once. And I was just I thought I was having a stroke. I was this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. One of my favorite players talking about her book. And getting to talk to her was an absolute delight. Expectations exceeded.
A real dream come true. I got to say, Pace Case, when you and I got into this game 2 years ago with a little Zoom recorder sitting on my couch, speaking into it, not really knowing what we were doing, the goal was always to be able to talk to these players who helped shape the game and really made it what it is today. And I feel like today we got to do that. And it's always surprising to me that it happens. And I sincerely cannot thank Sarah Heron enough for coming on our show and giving us this opportunity to talk to her about, again, just one of the most important seasons that there ever was. Maybe the most important season in terms of putting a bachelor up as, we call Sean Lowe, the golden boy of the bachelor, because he's the only bachelor ever to marry his ring winner. And that season had a lot of crazy stuff in it. And so to hear about it firsthand from Sarah was fantastic. Thank you so much.
And don't forget about our book signing on Saturday. That is at 3 p.m. at Skylight Books in Los Angeles, if you are in the area and avail.
See you there, maybe. And before we go, as always, what is that dwab at?
It has been 7,309 days without an Asian bachelor. Praise be, Dark Lord Palmer.
Please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us, and then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us, and then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us, and then